morning.
Good morning.
It's so cold and wet and
it's
yucky.
Not, it's warm and wet.
It's about half past winter, and the same thing happens to me every year about this time.
What's that?
I recall the halcyon days of my youth in sunny California.
Excuse me?
And I long for blue skies and sunshine.
Blue skies, nothing but blue
skies. And a nice light breeze.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was a breeze. Garbage pails were rolling across the street this morning. It was so breezy.
Yeah.
All right. This is Joe Uris. That is Abe Proctor. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. It's talk radio, 231-8187. And I'm sick as a dog. Why are dogs...
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that.
What is it with dogs and sickness?
I don't know.
Are cats ever sick?
Apparently not.
Oh, yeah, they are. You know, the whole vet thing in America has changed. They now have a protocol. You take a pet in, and it costs you, like, you have to drop, like, $300 right like that. It's a whole new thing.
Yeah, I just took my 9-month-old puppy in.
Yeah, it cost a lot, didn't it?
Yeah, things shut into her and stuff. Yeah, it was expensive.
Yeah. I have a pet, you know, no more eating the dog, as it were. All right, 231-8187, yeah, talk radio. We got a lot. Abe's going to take the lead on a whole bunch of stuff. I got some bad Alito news and a lot of other bad news. And Abe's got some really bad news.
Yeah, and that thing we just heard on the KBOO Morning News was stunning.
What bad news?
China is going to stop investing a whole bunch of its money in U.S. dollars.
Oh, well, you know.
That could mean a whole bunch of things.
No, our listenership doesn't care about that because our people are past money.
They're past money?
They're beyond money.
Do you know what one of the largest industries in America is right now?
I have absolutely no idea.
Americans selling houses to each other.
Well, yes.
And extending debt to do so.
Yes.
And where I said debt funded, a lot of it?
Yeah.
From foreign investment in U.S. Treasury bonds.
Well, and
if that stops, then people are not going to be able to buy homes as much.
They're going to live where they are.
People's overextended credit will start to eat them. Housing prices will plummet. And all of this wealth that people thought they had because they don't get it in wages anymore will dry up.
Why do you hate America so much?
I don't know.
I mean, this is, you know, Chinese, we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, we did.
We all knew that. I mean, you know, this is not even hardly news. It was when.
Yeah.
So now it's starting. But it's only a little bit of it. They're not taking all their debt.
Yeah, officially it may mean that the party's over, but... I mean, people have been having hangovers now for some time.
Oh, the party's been over for so long.
People have been staggering out the door for a while.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know. What the heck? All right, I'm overwhelmed, or is it underwhelmed? So many things, so little time, and it's so bad, and you're going to talk about...
I'm going to talk about the concentration of executive power.
Oh, come on. Why do you hate it so much?
Dick Cheney's architecture. Why do I hate it so much?
Not presidential power, but America.
I love America, Joe.
Oh.
If I didn't love America, this stuff wouldn't make me so angry.
If I didn't love America, I wouldn't bother with this.
Right, exactly. And that's the perfect refutation for Republicans when they ask you, why do you hate America?
Oh, yeah.
Say, I love America. If I didn't love America, I wouldn't care.
Republicans. It's the chicken Democrats, too, man.
Well, I don't generally hear them asking, why do we hate America?
That's because they hate America, too.
All right. Well, why don't you start by talking about Sam Alito, because that ties into what I was going to talk
about. Actually, I'm gonna steal a note from the Oregonian, of all places, Marie Coco. Her column, which just came out this morning, and I happened to look at it. She talked about Alito's record.
She's syndicated, isn't she?
She is syndicated, right. Very cynical syndicated, you know. Well, here's an interesting one. Where to start? But, you know, right now the minors are in the news. Not persons under the age of 18, but...
Persons under the earth.
Persons under the earth,
right.
Exactly. And, you know, a scandalous, and this has been underplayed by the media, disgusting, unnecessary series of deaths have taken place. Turns out that coal miners in, for example, Australia have equipment that deals with accidents like what happened in West Virginia. We don't. Inspection of mines, under this administration, the number of inspectors has been cut way back and so on. Well, but...
And cronies have been appointed to positions
of responsibility. Well, cronyism is American tradition, but it has definitely reached new heights under Bush. Anyway, a mining case in 1997, the Third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, on which Alito sat, ruled that federal mine safety regulators had clear jurisdiction over a coal processing site. Alito dissented, saying the government had no power to protect minors, even though coal is an interstate, you know. And then Alito's main principle of jurisprudence, according to Coco, is this. He sides with those who exercise power and authority and against those who don't. So that's it. If you have power, then I'm on your side. If you don't, I'm not. So this is the guy who's against workers, who's against ordinary people, who's against the smaller business, against the bigger business. You know, whoever's got the power, he's going to side with them, no matter what cutenesses he presents to the senators.
Whoever butters his bread, that's who goes with.
Well, it's not even, I mean, it's a philosophical position.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's not even about money, probably. It's just about how he believes. He believes that absolute power is absolutely right, not absolutely corrupt.
And that's why he's been appointed to the Supreme Court.
It doesn't matter.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah. It does not matter that power is held by giant corporations, or the police, or the prosecutors, or the immigration authorities, unless the government is regulating such matters of health and safety. Now, here's the exception. Alito is also likely to rule that its power can't extend that far. In other words, if you're going to protect people with the government, he's against it. If you're going to enforce something, he's for it. There is a conflict between institutions and individual rights. Judge Alito's dissenting opinions argue against individual rights 84% of the time. This is from a University of Chicago professor, Cass Stunstein, writing an analysis that he conducted for Ted Kennedy. In most all of these 84% of the cases, Alito dissented from a court with a majority of Republican appointees. So he's to the right of the Republicans. Ritter News Organization, which reviewed 311 published Alito opinions, reached a similar conclusion. darn near impossible to find a case in which Alito agreed with someone who claimed mistreatment by police, or discrimination on the job, or improper denial of pension or pay. So he's got an incredibly lopsided record. He's essentially for the powerful against the powerless. And he is also on record as favoring unlimited power for the executive branch of government. Mm-hmm. And this segues into your point.
It does. But just a quick aside, do you think maybe Alito's philosophical stance that you just outlined stems from a basic feeling of anatomical inadequacy? I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm speechless at the irrelevance of that.
Well,
the size of his whatevers is irrelevant.
Well, yeah, I know sometimes any cigar speculation, is just a cigar.
Any speculation is irrelevant.
I don't know.
I mean,
okay then.
All right.
Sam Alito.
Yes, Sam Alito.
Has been nominated.
You know, I want to interrupt this. Do you think the Democrats, speaking of size of anatomical parts, will have the courage to actually filibuster and stop this guy?
To have the parts? No, you know, I really don't think they will. I think there's a...
So it's a done deal.
Yeah, I think it'll be confirmed. I mean, but he could be confirmed without a single Democratic vote.
Okay, if you out there within hearing range of our voices care at all about the future of your country, if you really love America, you have a job to do today, and that is to call every senator you can think of, including your own, not just your own, call their offices, telegram their offices, email their offices, and insist that Alito not be confirmed as a justice of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You got to do that. If you don't do that, I don't want to hear from you anymore.
He could be confirmed without a single Democratic vote. And here's the thing. He needs to be, if he is confirmed, he needs to be confirmed without a single Democratic vote. The Democrats need to unite in a block against him because it's the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do, but I just am so... Never mind.
This Vichy Democrat position espoused by some saying...
Vichy?
Vichy Democrat. Appease the bad guys and hope to make up ground in the next election. That's not going to work.
You mean the Lieberman lists?
Yes, yes. Okay. Lieberman.
It's
Lieberman.
Lieberman.
All right. Okay, Sam Alito. Sam Alito, the short answer is he's going to be confirmed because he supports the untrammeled... application of executive power.
He was selected for that reason.
He was selected for that reason.
And because he's bright.
Yeah, something like that. He's selected because...
He's kind of cute, too, you know.
He will rule...
He's got that nerdy cuteness that they...
Well, I thought Roberts was way cuter, personally.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Senator Dale Connor, for that
matter, yeah.
Right. he was appointed or nominated because he's going to support the untrammeled application of executive power. He is going to support this administration's ongoing crusade to gather unto itself king-like powers.
King-like.
That transcend the system of checks and balances envisioned by the framers. And lest we forget, at the time that this division of power was envisioned by the framers, it was something entirely new in Western civilization. And that's exactly what's at stake here. I want to point you guys towards two outstanding articles on Salon.com. And incidentally, I urge you all also to support Salon.com. They have a yearly premium membership. I think it costs $30 or something. And it's well worth it. To my knowledge, they're the only internet-based publication that's solely internet-based that has managed to survive and be profitable for the last, I think it's in 10 years now online. And it's well worth it. Sidney Blumenthal and Tom Engelhardt, both of these articles appeared on January the 5th, and they are both on the concentration of executive power. Now, you've been hearing a lot about the president and signing statements, have you not? Signing statements. That means a short statement written by the president at the time he signs a bill into law, detailing essentially how he views the law and how he's going to interpret it, and in the case of this president, how he's selectively going to apply it.
Yeah.
And is that okay, you ask? Well, no.
Is that okay, I ask?
No, it's not okay. The president cannot selectively decide how he's going to apply a law passed by Congress. His check on the power of Congress is called a veto. Now, as we know, this president has vetoed how many bills? Since
none. Zero.
None. Zero. That's how the president exercises a check over Congress. Not by looking at a bill and saying, this is how I interpret this law, this is how I'm going to enforce it. But during his first term alone, President Bush issued an unprecedented 108 statements upon signing bills of legislation, this is from the Blumenthal article, that expressed his own version of their content. He has countermanded the legislative history, which legally establishes the foundation of their meaning, by executive diktat. I love that word.
Diktat.
In particular, he has rejected parts of legislation that he considered stepped on his power in national security matters. In effect, Bush engages in presidential nullification of any law he sees fit. He then acts as if his gesture supersedes whatever Congress has done. And we can see the evidence of this everywhere, from the formation of his extrajudicial courts to try enemy combatants, his detainment of American citizens without warrant, without being charged for crime, essentially a suspension of habeas corpus that hasn't happened since the Civil War.
Spying on,
yes, that's the most visible and most recent example, spying on American citizens.
Clearly in contradiction of
the Constitution.
You think they're listening to us right now?
They might be listening to us right now, you know, but these are still the public airways, so I'm still going to say this. Until they come clap us in irons, Joe.
Why do you hate America so much?
Stop that. So, yeah, the president has decided he's going to spy on American citizens. Now, did he countermand a particular law in this case? Well, yes, not only an established statute, but also the text of the Constitution itself. He decided to circumvent the courts provided for in the Foreign Intelligence Service Act passed during the Cold War that really give him a hell of a lot of leeway to begin with. He can investigate someone and then go to a special court and ask for a warrant as long as he does so within a few days. But that wasn't even good enough for him. He decided he needs to spy on people without warrants anytime he wants. And what is this? And why does he defend it so vociferously? Because it is a means to an end. All these actions he has taken and his administration have taken are a means to an end. And anybody who gets bogged down in the details of these things, however reprehensible they might be, are missing that larger point. He's not spying on Americans because he believes it's a useful tool in the war on terror. He's doing it because he's consolidating executive power, according to the vision of Dick Cheney, and implementing a sort of executive state that Cheney has been gunning for since he was a member of the Nixon administration.
So this is both a philosophical and a practical effort to take over America.
That's exactly what it is. And so the obvious question is, well,
that's treason, isn't it?
It is treason. As somebody observed, a commentator observed a couple weeks ago, we may have witnessed the very first time in American history that a president has admitted an impeachable offense on national television, defended it, and then gone on to say he'd do it again.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. So, you might ask, well, why would the president give unto himself powers that, you know, somebody from the other party might eventually have when somebody from the other party is president, or somebody who's ideologically opposed might eventually wield?
Good point.
And the answer is, these people don't ever intend for anybody from the other party to hold the office of chief executive ever again.
So when they phonied up the elections in 2000 and 2004,
yeah,
that was not just for Bush, that was for their power trip.
For the establishment of one-party rule.
You're serious?
Yes. This is the executive side of a two-sided coin. The other side is, of course, the entrenched DeLay Abramoff cash machine in Congress. And, we must add, the packing of the federal judiciary by conservatives that's been going on since the Reagan administration.
I wouldn't call them conservatives. I would call them activist right-wing judges.
Well, they weren't so much during Reagan, but that's the trend that they've taken on since.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is, this is a betrayal of America as its founding fathers, there were, of course, no founding mothers, understood it. This is a betrayal of our society. And really, you can sort of see the pattern that made this legitimate beginning in 1947 with the creation of the National Security Agency and with the CIA and all that other stuff, always because of an enemy that was so huge, so terrifying.
Right. Right. And that's, incidentally, why the war on terror was proclaimed so quickly after September the 11th, and why the president has told us repeatedly it's going to be waged indefinitely, in secret, and at an unforeseen cost to the American taxpayer. Because under no other atmosphere can he so effectively gather power unto himself.
You're starting to make me a little nervous.
All right. Well, don't take my word for it. Political science professor Philip Cooper here of Portland State University is quoted in the Blumenthal article. I tried to find him, but it was unsuccessful.
Yeah, I don't know if he exists, man.
Blumenthal quotes him.
Well, he might have been disappeared already. So.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I think we should still try and track him down. This is what he says. Bush, Cooper writes, quote, has very effectively expanded the scope and character of the signing statement, not only to address specific provisions of legislation that the White House wishes to nullify, but also in an effort to significantly reposition and strengthen the powers of the presidency relative to the Congress. This tour de force has been carried out in such a systematic and careful fashion that few in Congress, the media, or the scholarly community are aware that anything has happened at all.
Well, and this raises an interesting point. You would think that Congress would be jealous of its power, and yet they have consistently, in a cowardly manner, rolled over for this.
No, not only rolled over, but given a political cover.
Yeah, so we really are in trouble here.
Yeah.
If you're right, I mean, I don't know.
Do you recall the investigation into pre-war intelligence?
Yes.
The can that was kicked down the road past the 2004 elections.
I do recall that.
By the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Right.
Yeah, that's just one very obvious example of this. If not for Republican enablers in Congress, president would have been able to do what he did. And that is conceal to us the fact that everybody who's been paying attention already knows, the fact that they made up intelligence when the facts didn't fit what their version of reality should look like.
Now, here's what I find interesting in all this, seriously. Historically, when you have dictatorships, let's look at Nazi Germany, just as a kind of an example. When you have these dictatorships, or even Stalin's Russia, because the people who take power are paranoid, they always put their own people into positions. So you get a lot of cronyism.
Mm-hmm.
And cronyism invariably involves people who are not competent at the jobs they're given.
No.
So your bureaucracy begins to crumble underneath you and leaves you kind of hanging by the scaffold of your own party.
Yeah.
Hoist by your own petard, if you will.
Indeed.
So one of the things that's hopeful, a hopeful sign right now, is the degree to which that's the case with this administration. They put incompetence in charge of FEMA, incompetence in charge of all these other agencies, including the mining, mine administration. The fact of the matter is that because they put these people in charge who are very incompetent, the whole thing begins to crumble around them and leaves them hanging out there in the wind. So maybe, just as the Nazis made the same mistake, maybe these guys are going to make those kind of mistakes, and it'll catch up with them before the end of this year.
Well, that may be. But I tend to think that this whole situation goes beyond notions of constitutionalism.
Yeah.
And it is something larger. Maybe the job of these guys is to stand guard while we see the final transition of power away from nation states like the United States into the hands of transnational corporations.
transnational corporations kind of with figurehead governments, you mean?
So with figurehead governments that are only too happy to provide military protection to whatever these corporations want to do.
With private armies, of course.
Well, with private armies and public armies. The only thing missing right now is a conscripted public army.
Well, I think it would be interesting if we had a national draft, you know, because then maybe the children of the rich would have to serve as well, and it would maybe make it harder to wage this kind of war we're doing, this foolish war.
It might, yeah, it would probably make it much more difficult.
So they're not going to do that.
Yeah, as we talked on the show before, that's what brought the Vietnam War to a close.
You know, the challenge you throw out is enormous.
It is enormous.
We have an extremely opportunistic and ideologically bereft of any direction Democratic Party. We have a clear takeover of the Republican Party by these right-wing ideologues of two kinds, the hyper-opportunistic Cheneyists on the one hand, and then these know-nothing Christian fundamentalists on the other.
Right.
And those guys now are dominating the discourse, you know, the discussion of everything.
Yep.
And with the Democrats having lost their social democratic way, as it were, poor people getting poorer, middle class sinking into the working class and lower, you mentioned the Chinese pulling their money out. I mean, things are getting really, really, really scary.
Yep.
And meanwhile, rushing down the tracks toward a horrible end is the environmental failings of the West. Oh, of the world, for that matter.
Yeah, of the world. And the thing is, we may not even be able to arrest this slide through the electoral process. It may have been so completely hijacked by now that even an overwhelming victory won't be enough to bypass the black box voting apparatus.
That all may be true, but existentially, anybody who doesn't do anything is with them.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, whether or not you consider yourself a liberal or a conservative or a lefty or a constitutionalist or whatever, if you don't actively oppose this kind of new age fascism,
yes, indeed,
then you're with them.
Yeah. What is it Dr. King said? When people of conscience do nothing, that's when injustice happens.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact quote.
No, but that's true. I mean, that is true, and it really doesn't, you know, in our short lives, it really doesn't matter whether we are absolutely successful. What really matters is that we absolutely resist.
Yeah, absolutely resist. And what's more, we push forward vociferously, not only in the concrete world of political interaction that we talk about on this show, but also in the more abstract ideological world. What we're seeing here now is we're not just our nation as we've known it is at stake, but the tradition that has existed for only about 500 years. And that is since the Enlightenment began. And that is the idea that we can more fully understand the world and our humanity by applying reason to it. And that we can deliberately try to do things a different way. And this is the legacy that's at stake. When our Constitution was drafted, it was radical in that it was doing things entirely differently. It was putting a check on the natural tendencies of people in power to gather more power unto themselves. It separated powers among three branches of governments so that it would never be concentrated in any one set of hands. And we're seeing that end, and with it, unless some other nation, maybe the EU, is able to take up the torch, we're seeing the end of that idea that has existed since the scientific age began, roughly the 1400s?
So a brief flame.
A brief flame, when measured
out
against the broader scope of history, is flickering in the wind right now. That's what we're talking about.
And to recapitulate for those who are just tuning in, your argument is pretty profound. Your argument is, first of all, that executive power, it goes untrammeled and becomes ever more powerful. That, for example, the Alito nomination, which is likely to be approved by a cowardly Senate, Democrats and Republicans, is another way of establishing that executive power. That, in fact, this executive power will continue on beyond the Bush administration. That we are at the possibly the edge of the end of democracy in the United States at any level.
Yeah, and possibly the end of the Enlightenment.
And beyond that, possibly the end of the Enlightenment.
And science will continue. Technology will continue.
Not real science, just technology. Science
right.
Technology is basically science in the service of a class.
Right, or the application of science to the physical world.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has been helpful to a great many people. Let's not sell it short.
Yeah.
That will continue. But this notion that we can apply reason to the way we govern ourselves is in danger.
Okay, I got to remind people, you're listening to Joe Urs and Abe Proctor on KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talk Radio. We do want to hear from you. Don't let us depress you. Remember, the fight must continue. 231-8187 is the number to call.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got phone calls.
Should we start taking
phone
calls?
Let's take some phone calls. Who we got first? James! I'm so surprised.
You've
James!
You've reached the winter of our discontent. How are you?
Hello, James.
James.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, James, do you still think I'm both a communist and a fascist?
Well, I do have a
contradiction, you realize.
Not necessarily.
I'm calling to bury the hatchet. I have a solution.
Okay.
Both conservatives and liberals. Now, if you are right, Abe, the solution to the problem is we abolish the Internal Revenue Service.
Oh,
We cut all the taxes. We take the power from the state. We give it back to the people, and we go
Don't
back.
You mean give it to the corporations?
See, that would eliminate, we eliminate that power. That's the only solution. If you are right, Abe, that is the only solution that we can do to save this country.
Okay, James. Thanks very much for the call.
In a word, balderdash.
Well, I don't understand why
do away with the Internal Revenue Service
was going to solve everything.
Do away with public education. Do away with the vestiges of public health care that we have. Do away with environmental and labor regulation. That's what doing away with the IRS means.
Yeah, but you'd also do away with the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force.
Somehow, I don't think so.
James is the friendly ideologue who comes to call. Yeah.
If we just cut taxes, everything will be okay.
Well, aren't we cutting taxes to the rich already?
Yeah, and everything's not okay.
In fact, haven't we shifted the tax burden onto the poor?
Yes, we have.
And is everything okay?
No.
Oh.
But I think James might be talking about getting rid of taxes for everybody.
All together.
Right.
No more IRS.
Mm-hmm. And then James can wait till the pothole on Burnside Street gets so big that he can't drive his car around it anymore.
Well, that might slow down traffic, and then, you'd have maybe more clean air.
You're right, James. I give up. You win.
All right.
Who's next? Andy? Annie.
Annie. Hi, Annie.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. That's why they pay us the big bucks.
I'm overwhelmed with all of this, and I have to go with Abe. I think we are. We have approached the end of the age of enlightenment, and I told my kids years ago, I said, what our society is? It's a big ball of pook that's been smashed together, and it just steams and smolders, and then it emanates out into the atmosphere, and that's what we live and breathe.
But maybe it's the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Well, I don't know, but I do know that I've been just since Ronnie's first term, I was saying that we will be trading places with the Soviet Union, except that we will be under the right wing, and we have lost all common decency, we've lost common courtesy, and we sure as hell have lost common sense.
All right, Annie.
We are in the deepest of doo-doo, and I don't know how we can climb out. And, and let's discuss more about 9-1-1. When the emperor said, don't let that little thing scare you. Big Daddy's here to take care of you, and just go out and shop and spend your money.
Right.
Yeah. Dear God, help us.
He said, nothing is the same anymore, but I want you to go act like everything's the same.
Yeah, no, shop. Shop
right.
Till you drop. Everything's cool.
Yeah, go to the movies.
I like
go
that,
to the mall.
Actually. I thought that was good.
Thank you, Annie, for the call.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, that prediction that she made back in Reagan's term is
pretty
turned
prescient,
out to be
all
accurate.
In all. I want to say something about this. We all tend to get into this doomsday mode of thinking, which is very tempting. But the fact of the matter is that it can be dysfunctional for the struggle. Nothing is writ in stone. Even the most fascist of governments will in time crumble. It is still possible, not inevitable, but possible that reasoned resistance and good alternatives can be presented to the American people and things can be turned around.
Yes, it's going to take relentless pressure.
Well, it's going to take a lot of work. And the American people have been taught essentially that politics is kind of a spectator sport. And most people are so worried about making the nut that they just don't have the time or the energy to resist.
But I don't buy that. Because now we have the means to apply relentless pressure more easily than we've ever had.
What do you mean?
But how easy is it to bus off an email to your representative or senator? And multiply that by however many thousands of people live in these districts here.
Yeah, but, you know, money talks. Saying a senator, we don't like it, isn't, unless it gets into the hundreds of thousands of people doing it, it's not that effective.
Yes, money talks, indeed. But if it gets into the hundreds of thousands of people giving small amounts of money, Howard Dean showed us during the last election is that sort of model can be devastatingly effective. And it can even counter the big money establishment that the Republicans depend upon so heavily.
Well, you're supporting my point. I mean, to give up is foolish, and it's evil. It's actually evil. The struggle itself, which is much more enjoyable than just sitting around going, "Oh, it's getting dark," you know, it is very important and is very worthwhile and can surprisingly yield positive results. Look at what's happening. I mean, there are counterforces at work. The fact of the matter, for example, I'm going to use one example. The fact of the matter is that Latin America, South America,
yes,
is already developing an alternative economic and social system. Now, whether it survives or not, really, it's interesting because the war in Iraq is so occupied, the U.S., it can't do much to stop that. But if it survives its own human tendencies toward corruption, if it survives efforts by the CIA and so on, it could end up being an alternative model for the whole world. It will form an alliance with China, however corrupt and fascistic China may be. The fact of the matter is that money will flow between South America and China. Mm-hmm. India comes into the picture in the same kind of context. Suddenly, the United States is really a backwater whose people are as ignorant as dirt and becomes less and less a significant power. The only thing the U.S. has going for it is its military power and its destructive power, and those all may be checked and balanced by the reality of human effort elsewhere.
And it's got its consumer base going for it, which, after all, drives this whole global economy that we're talking about.
Well, and yeah, but all that may be very temporary.
That's true, and that's the great irony of all this. If the Bushies succeed and manage to establish a sort of new transnational feudal overlord sort of class, an executive class, and drive the middle class into submission, then all of a sudden it doesn't have people to buy its products anymore.
Well, that is the paradox of this system. And ironically, the part that makes me really sad, is that I really am a patriot. I really want to see the United States be the good guy of history. And that seems more and more a fantasy. As I watch these people dominate, and as I watch their opponents become a wimpy, loyal opposition that doesn't really have a vision for the future and doesn't really fight. So I don't know. But I think that the great forces of history do not necessarily acquiesce silently to this ambition of these people who've seized power in the United States. I also think that there's a great train wreck coming down the line, which is the environmental realities.
Yeah, that may trump all these other issues that we're talking about.
Anyway, let's hear some.
For right now, this administration won't even acknowledge that the most pressing environmental issue, global warming, even exists.
Even though the last holdout of the legit scientists from, I think, MIT just said, oops, you know, you're right.
No, they still refuse to acknowledge it exists. Talk about failing to apply reason to the world around you.
Yeah, see, they get into this argument about global warming. I think everyone has to admit it exists. The only question that they can still hold out on is whether humans are responsible, which is irrelevant, because humans can help prevent it.
Well, I think that the evidence is overwhelming that humans have contributed to it.
Oh, I think so, too. I think so, too. You know, folks, if you're just tuning in, Abe and I really do want to hear from you. This is Talk Radio. This is KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial. And the number to call as we talk our dire indisputed positions is 231-8187.
That's right. Now, to the extent, one more comment here and we'll take another call.
Okay.
To the extent that the United States has managed to be the good guy in its history, and it has managed this at several very significant and far-reaching instances, and it's also managed to be an incredibly bad guy, let's not deny that. To the extent that it's managed to be a good guy, it has been because power has been divided in this country such that the baser instincts of those who seek power have been curbed. And that's why this concentration of executive power is such a threat to the values that we claim to espouse.
Well, you know, this question of an imperial presidency is not new.
No,
books have been written through the entire 20th century on this very issue. Arthur Schlesinger Jr., for example, wrote a very important book, I think it was called The Imperial Presidency. This threat of centralized power in the hands of the executive branch has always been perceived as a very real one. Even during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, a great president, used the writ of habeas corpus to silence his Democratic opponents.
Yeah, and there were grumblings about FDR acquiring.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Let's go out to Dave. Hi, Dave, you're on the air.
This is Leah Maka. I'm not Dave.
Oh, Leah, how are you doing?
I beg your pardon.
Good morning. You guys are some of my favorite people.
Even if we get your name wrong?
Huh?
You're one of our favorite people, too, because you listen to us.
Oh. Joe, I was delighted to hear your request or your longing for some hopefulness and some positive stuff. And I would like to share something. I took my grandson to see the current Harry Potter movie the other day.
Huh.
I was blown away.
Really?
This is a message for all of us. In the very last scene, the man who took Dumbledore's place, I can't remember his name, but he says, we live in dangerous times. Soon we will be asked to choose between what is right and what is easy.
Wow.
And I went, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we are at that point. I did not hear about China this morning, but if that's happening, we are already over the threshold. If they do that, we're over the threshold, and much of what you guys have been talking about is we're going to be faced that we are faced with it immediately. So, but I was just, it was so hopeful. It was like there's magic afoot. I don't know what form it's going to take, but it was just incredible. So I'm rereading all the Harry Potter books. So.
Well, listen, beyond reading the Harry Potter books,
it's you've good got advice, to, by the way, good advice.
You've got to call your senators and any senator whose name comes to mind and tell them, no Alito.
Time to read the Harry Potter books.
No Alito.
I will do that this
morning.
I will do that.
All right, everybody's got to do that. Okay. Everyone within the sound of our voices, call anybody in power and say, no Alito.
Thank you, Leah.
Okay.
Why do you say no Alito? No Alito. Why?
Why? What?
Because he has expressed in the past the right of the president to assume extra legal powers when necessary.
And essentially, he believes in absolute power for the president.
He does. He wrote a memo in 1986 about these signing statements that we've been talking about, saying that, essentially, because the president's approval of a piece of legislation is just as important as Congress's. Well, that's what he claims anyway. Thus, his interpretation of the law is just as important as Congress's. When really that's not true. The only check, as we said earlier, that the president has is his veto, not his selective interpretation of the law.
You know, in the past, we've had significant decisions from the Supreme Court on limiting the power of the executive branch. There's a nice piece in the New York Times on this, pointing out that the president's authority is at its maximum, this is Justice Jackson, when the acts pursuant to an express or implied authorization of Congress are carried out. So this is what exactly has happened with the war on terror. Justice Jackson talks about a zone of twilight in which Congress has taken no action. In that case, any actual test of power is likely to depend on the imperatives of events and contemporary imponderables rather than on abstract theories of law. And then, he also said, the president takes action at odds with the will of Congress. In 1978, the law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was after the response to the Nixon attempt to take over power, appears to require court approval before monitoring the sort of activities the administration has acknowledged. Justice Jackson said the president's power is at its lowest ebb under those circumstances, and yet here we are with a Supreme Court that's going to give to the administration those very powers that should not, under the Constitution, ever go to the executive branch.
Never.
I mean, this is really serious for the structural integrity of our system. And it is particularly important to insist on the separation of powers and on the limitations of the power of the executive branch in times of crisis. And this has been defined, whether it really is or not, in this war on terror as a time of ultimate national testing and crisis.
An indefinite time.
Yeah, war unending.
Yeah.
Boy, does that ever sound
forever
Nazi.
Forever and ever, amen.
Yeah, doesn't that sound Nazi?
Yeah.
It does. All right. 2318187, let's go out to our old buddy, the pig farmer. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man.
Haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, that's because I get sick of being redundant, but I'll have to be redundant again, man.
Okay.
Like I've been saying since 2000 when I predicted, I don't know if you remember or not, but I predicted exactly what's happening way back then.
Well, you know, I didn't write it down, so.
Well, after he got elected the first time, I put on a black armband that said DOD that I'm still wearing, which was Death of Democracy. Anyway, you can't play the games. The only way you're going to beat them, get yourself below the poverty level. It isn't that hard. Grow a garden can, yada, yada, yada. That's what it's going to take. And without doing that, you're never going to win because they keep changing the rules. As long as you give them the power to have the rules, every time you get hep to how to beat them, they're going to change the rules on you.
So what do you want us to do?
Just quit buying stuff.
Oh, stop buying.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as much as you can. Let's lower your whole thing down to where you're not like me. I'm living on less than the poverty level, and I'm relatively fat.
Well, I understand your argument in the kind of profound sense of less being more, and the environment being healthier. But how exactly does this stop the Bush takeover of
because
the government?
Because if you're below the poverty level, you don't pay no taxes, they got no money, and they can't do nothing.
Yes, they can. They can plunge us further into debt, just like they have been doing.
Well, let them plunge us further into debt. Because if you, long as you try to play their game, they're going to beat you. I mean, I've tried all different ways, and our generation, I guess, I don't know how old you are, Abe, but I mean, Joe's and my generation turned out to be the most worthless bunch of people that was ever born on this earth.
Amen to that. Concern.
You young punk.
And so. Obviously, our generation, which now could have power, which could be making some changes, sold out somewhere along the way. Because there's still more us than them. I still believe that. But
I went with the Cadillac, man.
Huh?
I went with the Cadillac.
Oh, well, I went into the brush, so I mean, I ain't got a lot of room to talk, you know. But I tried, and then when things got weird and it just got to where you slamming your head against the wall, I went ahead in the brush. I'll be the first to admit that. But it still comes down to where the only way you're going to beat them is don't play the game. Because if you play the game at all, they're going to wind up beating you like they're doing. So that's my solution. If it works, I don't know, but it's a lot better than anything else I've tried.
Well, I let me suggest something to you. And I think one of the problems our culture has always had is that we haven't had... Actually, I'm teaching a course about this because I'm doing a course on the 1950s at Portland State. But one of the big changes that took place in the 40s and 50s was the loss by working-class labor unions of their real power and their ability to demand and negotiate solutions to problems that went beyond wage issues.
Right.
Now that was a real serious thing.
Right.
And I really believe that loss set labor up for the disaster that's going on today. It set all of us up for a disaster.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. See, my Uncle Ernie was one of the last of the Wobblies there, so I was raised amongst all that stuff. So, yeah, I believe that 100%.
Okay, so what I would argue is that what we need is the creation of, or revival in this case, of the tradition of people in the street. We actually, and here, you know, I have this guy who calls us every now and then and says he wants a general strike, and I say the conditions aren't right for it. Well, conditions aren't right for it, but you got to start somewhere. The fact of the matter is that if they told workers in France that they were going to take away their pensions, if they told workers in France they weren't going to have health care, there'd be millions of them out in the street. They couldn't get away with it. But American workers have become so pacified and so weak-willed that they allow this nonsense to go on, even as the rich certainly have health care and certainly have retirement plans.
Right, and they go all the way to shoot their own self in the foot. See, and the reason of that is they're not educated of this stuff, for one thing. Like my girlfriend's kids, just like now a junior, I guess, or sophomore, and they're not teaching them nothing. I mean, all they're teaching him to be is a good little android, you know. So that's been going on since I was in school, which, you know, that's what, long ass time ago. So if the people don't have the education, they don't have the desire, they don't have the basic knowledge, and they're fed a bunch of crap to just buy and be good little androids and get your little check and don't make waves and buy your stuff at the Gap or your $4 coffee or whatever.
Well, you know,
the only immediate solution to all of that I can see is just don't buy into all of that. And then what comes after that, I don't know. But you got to do something right now, you know.
Okay.
So that's all I got to suggest. And I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying it works for me. And I don't know what else to tell you all. But you're doing a better job than I am, obviously. So there you have it.
I don't know about obviously, but thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Bye.
So many fundamental issues he's bringing up.
Yeah, no, he's a good man. I love it when he calls. You know, The song that applies most to the condition of the working people of America today is an English song, a song by John Lennon, Working Class Hero.
Right, I thought it was Shake Your Groove Thing.
Nope, it's Working Class Hero. You know, they hit you in school and they don't like it if you're smart and they can't abide a fool. I mean, you know, that whole the whole notion of forcing conformity on individuals and essentially destroying the spirit, the sense of wonder and the sense of inquiry in human beings. And it is institutionalized in the society to produce a kind of mediocrity.
Yeah.
And that does have to be resisted. In fact, resistance has to take place in so many frames, in so many contexts now. But it's still doable, and it's still fun.
Yep.
It's much more fun than just going, oh, I'll listen to MTV or whatever, right. You know?
But the pig farmer brought up something very significant, and that is the role that the baby boom generation has played in all this. What has the story of American politics been for the past 30 or 40 years but the story of the baby boomers, who are the remain the single largest demographic group in our population? There was a time during the Vietnam War when the baby boomers in significant numbers were pointing towards an entirely different way of doing things. But since that time, that's been abdicated largely.
Well, let's just, for the sake of argument, give you that. The really important question now is, everyone has been told, essentially, that their pension is forfeit.
Yes.
Everyone has been told that their health care is gone.
Yeah.
Everyone must know, if they have at all any brain, that that's going to hurt.
Yep.
In the near, not the far, in the near future, particularly if you are a baby boomer.
Yes.
What,
and you're about to retire.
Years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, 60 years old. Well, you should expect, and I will expect, that every person who faces this would be up in arms, would be out in the street, would be making demands, would be participating in the electoral process, would be writing letters to the editor, would be sending missives to members of Congress and to the Senate saying, for example, no Alito, and would be ready to struggle long and hard against this fascism.
Yep.
So maybe that'll happen.
Yeah, we are ignoring the fact that the progressives actually won the last two presidential elections.
Well, I wouldn't call them progressives.
Well,
centrists.
Centrists and people on our side actually won.
Yeah. Now, the fact is that the system's been rigged, literally rigged, cannot be ignored, but it doesn't mean they can keep getting away with it.
No, it doesn't mean. But we still need to talk about, I think, the failure of the baby boomers to live up to the promise of their youth. And nowhere is that better exemplified than in John Kerry. And my contempt for him knows no bounds.
Oh.
How far did he fall from the guy who stood before Congress and said, how do you ask a man to be the last man to die for a mistake, to the guy who wouldn't even call President Monkey Boy a liar? That is an abdication of principles.
Well, it's cowardice, and it's too
That's
bad.
That's exactly what it is, and it is too bad.
But there are others in the wings. I can't name them right off the top of my head, I admit. Hi, 231-8187. This is Talk Radio. This is K-Boo. That's Abe. I'm Joe. We want to hear from you.
Greg, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
I heard a comment that fascism and communism, like Abe was trying to make the point, you can't be a fascist and a communist at the same time, and Joe made the comment. Well, not necessarily so. What do you mean, Joe?
Oh, okay. Here's what I mean. First of all, both are labels. You can't really, honestly, be a communist little c and be a fascist. But the fact of the matter is that under the guise of communism, a kind of fascist dictatorship took over in the Soviet Union. That's all I meant.
You're talking about methods.
I'm talking about methodology and actual gaining of access to and control of power.
Yeah.
But they're diabolically different because the fact is the state runs the system while in fascism, a business basically runs the
right.
state.
But both are totalitarian systems.
Well,
I think that's what Joel's saying.
That's all I'm saying.
But you can't be the, you know, I guess the thing is that what we're experiencing now is so far from communism that it's pitiful.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. What we have is an amazing centering of power in the hands of a very, very few. You know, if I was a new modern day entrepreneur, I would oppose this administration because it would probably eventually turn on me as a rival to power.
Yeah. Anyway, the point I was going to make is that unless we change the electoral system, and because we've basically been cheated out of two presidential elections. Unless we change the way the system is voting, we might as well just give it up right now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, there's many things to be done.
Don't you think that's the number one thing?
Well, I don't know what's number one.
Wait a minute. Since we've been cheated out of two elections, wouldn't you want to fix that problem first?
Well, the question is a tactical one. Yes, it's a problem that needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed as soon as possible. But right now, we're essentially in the situation of a holding action. We have to oppose each of the things that they thrust forward. That's very, very important. For example, it's really important to get the hell out of the Gulf. It's really important, yes, to demand electoral reform.
But wait. You're not going to get those unless you have at least a Democratic majority.
Catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah, so why not work on that first and then, you know, change it?
Well, I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're saying. Let me just suggest this, that and this is an important point to remember. The United States was the first democratic republic, small d, small r, in modern Western history. Now, because it was the first, and because it was devised as a system of checks and balances, not just among the branches of government, but on the essentially on the power of people, working people, and so on, it is a system that's approach to things is a little old-fashioned. If you look at European democracies, in terms of their structure, parliamentary systems are in many ways better. Now, if you want to make electoral reform and make it profound, you're going to have to look toward a system that, for example, allows minority power parties
some
representation.
No, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about the mechanics. The vote, each vote counts.
How are the votes counted? Yes. How are the votes counted, you're saying? That's the critical issue.
That's all I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If the mechanics are being rigged, how the heck are you going to get anything in there, no matter what majority you have?
No, you're right. You're right.
That is the conundrum
we find ourselves. We got to clean that up. I don't know how that gets cleaned up unless the Congress gets some courage.
Maybe gets cleaned up by overwhelming public opinion against it.
Yeah, you're right.
But one of the things that I now believe is absolutely necessary is that everybody, whatever their politics, and I really want to appeal not just to liberals and leftists, but to conservatives and libertarians. I really believe that the system that all of us collectively believe possible, and many of us love, has to be confronted and has to be improved, and it has to be, the bad guy system that's coming in has to be stopped. And we all owe it to the ideals of this country to start that movement. And I honestly believe that in order to do that, we're going to have to go into the streets.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I don't agree with the fact is that we have to make buddy-buddies with the right wing, because that's not how they got in power in the first place. You know, the right wing doesn't say, hey, I'm preaching to the choir. Or the right wing doesn't say, hey, I repeated the same message 10 times over, okay? They don't say that. That's the reason why they're in power right now.
Yeah, they fired...
Democrats love the idea that we're all, you know, this diverse group, but the fact is we're not in power, and the reason why we're not in power is because we let it slide through, all right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. You know,
And I want to thank you for the call, but in part... Okay. I really think that it's important to understand that the will to power is crucial here.
Mm-hmm.
These right-wingers have been planning and executing their plan for years and years.
Yes.
And in fact have formed alliances which are very unlikely.
Since Barry Goldwater's defeat, I would say.
I would say so. And the Christian fundamentalists find themselves in league with big business of all
with the
people,
moneyed class.
With the moneyed classes. I mean, this is an alliance of convenience, but it is profound and deep.
Indeed.
And really has effectively planned and carried out its plan to take over the government of the United States.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, liberals, leftists, whatever, have wandered about in dismay ever since Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Indeed.
And the only gains we have made have been gains, fortunately, for the rights of, and I don't know how long these are going to hold up, for the rights of minorities, including women.
Yeah.
And we've lost all the social democratic reforms that were built in the 1930s and 40s.
Yep. Since the dawn of industrial capitalism in the mid-1800s, our constitutional system has struggled against the excesses of industrial capitalism and has largely lost. We saw what the excesses of industrial capitalism can do in the Great Depression, and for a while after the Second World War, we got it right. We had an activist government that taxed the hell out of people who had too much money to begin with.
Well, it didn't tax them the hell out of them, just taxed them fairly.
Yeah, they were still rich. That needs to be said. They were still rich when the tax assessment happened. And we invested that money in education, in infrastructure, in the middle class. And we got it right for about three decades. But that establishment has been relentlessly battled against by the excesses of industrial capitalism. And we're losing.
I think you're right. I want to throw one thing out here, just, you know, something that needs to be done. This Friday, it's what, January 13th?
Yeah.
What, Friday the 13th?
Mm-hmm.
Ah! Friday the 13th, from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Pioneer Courthouse Square, is a big, hopefully big, rally. I don't know if it's going to be a march. Is there going to be a march? I don't know. This rally in March.
Yep.
Against the continuing war in Iraq. The Gulf War 15 years later, because it's been a continuous process. Special focus of the weekly Friday rallies, ongoing since 2001, but it's going to be bigger this time. Speakers, chants, marching, got to dress for the weather, I guess.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a little thing you can do.
Yep.
After you've made your telephone calls and your emails and your letters on the Alito nomination.
Indeed. And I got to say, speakers and chants are beside the point. Well, the point is people in the streets by the thousands. That is what we need.
And it's going to take a lot. You know, people, well, this is what's weird. When people get hurt economically, you would think that rather than being so ideologically motivated, they would suddenly say, ooh, my ox has been gored. But I'm not seeing that, and that's what's depressing me. People turn inward in this society. They essentially turn on the television.
Yeah. Our Al has been gored, you might say.
Okay, I'm not going to even say that. 231-8187 is the number to call. We are arguing, as we have for a lot, that the executive branch has taken over and that it's a bad executive branch, and we must do what we can, and we got to stop Alito, and we got to stop the war, and we got a lot of things to stop and some stuff to start, and we do want to hear from you. Who we got?
Cam. Good morning.
Good morning.
Did I get that right, Cam?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, I'm a self-professed radiohead. It's my first time calling in.
Good band, by the way.
I am a sustaining member of KABU and also of OPB. And
good for you.
I couldn't bear to listen to the Alito hearings up to this point because the questions really haven't begun. I wanted a couple points. Abe, you mentioned something that really stopped me in my tracks, something I've been waiting to happen, but I thought it would be out there further with regard to China's deciding that it may turn some of its American held dollars into euros.
Yeah.
Okay. This truly is the beginning of the economic end. If
indeed
this continues, I read earlier this week that Iran was trying to set up another kind of or its own oil consortium dealing with euros and working with the EU to do this. And if it seems to me, if since we are still so oil based in our economy, that if this comes about, then it's almost like it could goose the powers that be in this country with all our military might to just the kind of war that we need to keep ourselves rolling with oil. You know, it could be the Chinese soft way of defeating us without having to militarily confront us by just taking all, you know, they've been holding us up for so long, and if they turn all that into euros, then we're in real deep, you know.
Yeah,
what,
call it the lukewarm war, if you will.
Yeah, and it's just that move really scares me, I think, for the near future. And it also kind of highlights, in a way, the other factors of the machinations that have been going on to try to centralize, presidential power, but the cabal, basically, that's in charge. And it really is very, I think it's very frightening.
It is. And thank you very much for the call, Cam. The reason that this Chinese move is significant is that really one of the only ways that the middle class has managed to hang on over the past few years is through extension of personal debt, primarily in exploiting the value that has accrued in their property that they own. I'm talking about people who own houses. And if you think I'm off base on this, ask yourself, if you're a homeowner, have you refinanced in the past 10 years? Probably you have. You have exploited that gain in value. And at the same time, you've extended your personal debt. If all of a sudden there's not much capital available to borrow anymore, the refinance boom, as they call it, comes to an end, the value of houses plummets, and the net worth of what remains of the middle class vanishes. And that's an incredibly significant thing. Somebody who's written eloquently on this is Paul Krugman from the New York Times. Unfortunately, you can't read his columns for free online anymore. So subscribe to the Times and read Krugman. He talks about this far more eloquently than I can.
I agree with you to a great extent. I do think that I don't like to put my hopes on China as a good guy, because they're not.
No.
But I think that they see, I suspect, who knows, but I believe, that the Chinese see, as do many other powers in the world, that the United States is in a position where its only real power is to destroy its military power and its nuclear arsenal. And they are reacting to that and are systematically stripping the United States of its enormous economic hold on the globe. And that's going to go on for a while. And Americans don't seem to be attuned to it. You know,
no.
One of the things that always shocks me, particularly if I travel outside the United States, even to Canada or Mexico, but if I go beyond the water, you know, I discover people have a much better grasp of the real world and real economics and real politics. Americans are abysmally ignorant and lost in their own small world. And most Americans, A, don't have any sense of what's going on politically in their own country, and B, sure as hell have no sense of what's going on outside their own borders. This is unique to America. It has always been our problem.
I don't think it's unique, but go ahead.
Well, I think it's unique.
It's reached its pinnacle. Yeah,
it's pinnacle in America. And I think that this is something we're going to be paying for a lot. It's in our educational system. It's very much rooted in our whole culture. And I think that that's one of the things that really needs to be addressed. How well will it be addressed and how soon? I don't know. But there's a high price to be paid for this kind of ignorance.
Bread and circuses.
Yeah.
Said Caesar.
Caesar?
Is what the people want.
Well,
and now we've got more bread and better circuses than we've ever had.
So yeah, we have very good bread in Portland.
Very, very good bread.
Yeah.
Indeed. And the circuses are grand.
Yeah.
And most people just don't pay attention because they are so immersed in this, I don't want to call it a culture of sloth, but perhaps a culture of distraction.
Yeah, but cheap free porn?
Yeah, cheap free porn.
You know.
Brittany and Kevin are splitting up.
Oh yeah. What's going to happen?
Tom and Katie are pregnant.
Oh, Tom jumps on the couch. Ooh. No, really, it is an absurd environment when the real world is crashing down around us.
Yeah. Fiddling while Rome burns, you might say.
Make those calls against Alito.
I've run out of metaphors.
Okay.
Who do we have next?
Hi, Paul.
Hey, so it's not bread and circuses, it's guns or butter. Right now at the Doubletree Inn at Northeast 11th in Multnomah, Gordon Smith is having a military procurement fair.
Yeah, I noticed that.
A military procurement fair. What is that?
Well, that's where people can come and learn how to get tax dollars that are going to be spent on guns instead of tax dollars spent on butter.
Can I buy a tank?
Well, no, this is if you want to sell a tank. If you want, Abe, when you finish the show, you can come down here and bring your own sign or banner and welcome all the people to the procurement fair. And actually what we're doing is, my friend Grant over here, he's on the line to the Tom Hartman show. So this is going to be we're going to figure out something for Arbitron today. Who has the most activist audience? Is it the Joe and Abe show or is it the Tom Hartman show? We're going to see which show can turn out the most people to welcome the procurement people down.
So
there.
After people send out their messages on Alito, they should go down to the Doubletree Hotel in Lloyd Center, 11th and Holiday.
Yeah, bring your signs and banners. Let people know what you think. And like I said, someone's on the phone to Tom Hartman. Someone's on the phone to you, and we'll just see who can turn out the most people down here.
Well, I think it's a worthy challenge.
Absolutely, Hartman's got a big audience. I hope that his listeners turn out.
Okay.
We like Hartman.
We do.
Even though we're rivals.
Even though he's on the air right
now.
Oh
yeah, no. This is a friendly competition here. We're both working for the same goal. We'll just see, you know, how we can do this.
Okay, man.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, just to reiterate, there is this action going on right now from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 this afternoon. The war profiteers are gathering in Portland.
Sell that old tank that's in your garage.
Yeah, any old tank you got. This is
got a few thousand miles on it.
And drive it on down to the Doubletree Inn at Lloyd Center, 11th and Holiday, and protest I can't believe Gordon Smith sometimes. Well, how many defense contractors are there in Oregon? I don't even know. Not that many.
I don't know.
It's not like California or Alabama.
Does Intel dabble in...
I'm sure
they do. I'm sure they have some defense.
Anyway, you know, go on down there and let your voice be heard. And that's right after you make that call about Alito or calls.
Right. Or emails.
Or anything.
Right.
Screaming and yelling even works.
Yep. Or sending a severed calf's head or whatever.
No calf's head. What are you doing?
Calf.
Calf's head.
Horse head.
Yeah.
Not a little mafia trick.
No. None of that. All right. 231-8187. We're talking about the gathering of power in the hands of the imperial presidency, and we want to hear from you. And let's go out to Kirk.
Kirk,
you're on the air.
Two to beam up. Kirk?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Actually, I called in to see if you guys are interested in hearing the conservative side of the coin on this.
Absolutely.
Okay, yes, but I want to say this. Wait a minute. James calls up here and he throws around terms like communist and fascist because he's not actually making an argument. James, I like your calls, but I'd like it better if you called up and instead of calling me a fascist, told me why concentration of executive power is a good thing, for example.
But let's hear this
so
guy.
So let's hear what Kirk has to say.
Kirk, please, go ahead.
Okay. It's Kurt, by the way. With
Kurt.
The
Kurt.
Kurt.
Okay. With a T.
How do I put this? I voted for Bush both 2000 and 2004.
Uh-huh.
I worked on his campaign. That's the first time I've become politically active since 2000, right?
Okay.
All of this took place. Before that, I was kind of what they refer to as a swing voter, right? Sometimes I voted voted on the issues, and I voted for the candidates that I liked, and I didn't support one political party
You're
over
a swinger.
Another.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I viewed the Clinton administration in the same way you guys view the Bush administration.
How's that?
I viewed Clinton as somebody who didn't believe in the Constitution, didn't respect the rights of American citizens, and was using his position as president to override the Constitution and ignore it when he didn't like it, and that's why I became politically active on the other side of the line from you guys, for the same reasons that you're talking about.
Right. Well, wait, where did Clinton ignore the Constitution?
Okay, Clinton ignored the Constitution in that, let's see. Okay, I'm an NRA member.
Okay.
Lifetime member. Okay, so the Second Amendment is a big issue for me, and I vote my guns every election.
Okay.
Clinton, when he got elected in 2000, made a point of being on TV, walking around in his camo, carrying his shotgun, going duck hunting with his buddies in Arkansas.
All right.
He never made a definitive statement because I watched it. I wanted to hear, what does the guy have to say about Second Amendment before mm-hmm. I voted for him? Because I was excited about Clinton and actually voted for him in his first time.
So you voted for him in 92, but not in 96?
But not in 96.
Okay.
Okay, so then, so here's a guy who doesn't ever make a statement for or against the Second Amendment or giving his position, but puts out, hey, I'm a good old boy.
So let me cut to the chase. You figure the Second Amendment is the most important amendment?
I think that all the other amendments hang on the Second Amendment
sure.
because the government has to be polite to an armed populace.
Okay, do you still have your guns?
Oh, of course.
Did Clinton take them away?
Clinton did. He tried.
But you still have them.
But I still have
them. So the Constitution remained intact?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, so how else did Clinton walk all over the Constitution?
Okay, how else did he walk on it? Well, he also signed on, I can't quote chapter and verse on this, but the bottom line is he did the same sort of things that Bush was doing. He bombed foreign countries, okay? He had us in military adventures without declaring war, you know. Okay, so he did the same sort of things that Bush is doing. It's just, and understand me, I'm not particularly a great Bush fan. I voted mostly for Bush because he wasn't Al Gore, okay, and because he wasn't, what's his name?
Kerry
from Massachusetts, okay. I have a different take on those guys. Some of what you guys are talking about, I totally agree with. I totally agree that we need to get back to the basis of the Constitution. We need to get back to We need to limit the power of corporate America. I'm in small business, and I have to deal with those guys, and it's very difficult. It's how you want to get there that I have a difficulty with you guys. But the main thing is your one caller, and the thing that I seem to get from you guys, talking about how the election was stolen in 2000 again in 2004. I think what you're not recognizing is that out here in America, at least 50% of the population doesn't believe like you do. And you are focusing on a group of leaders that we may or may not. In other words, we're not all a bunch of robots that think Bush and Cheney and all those guys are Jesus Christ. We voted for them because they were the closest to what we wanted, we thought, at the time.
No, I think, this is Joe, let me just respond. I think what you're saying is true. That is to say, there is a significant percentage of American voters who really thought, and probably still to a great extent think, that these guys represent what they believed. And you are a good representative of those beliefs.
Right.
Now, the problem that I have is that you've been duped. You really have been duped. These guys really are different than any other Republicans in history, and they're different than any other Democrats in history, in that they are putting together a system that gathers power in the hands of the executive branch in a way that is unprecedented. They talk your talk, but they don't walk your walk. If they actually gain the power that they are struggling to get, you will find that they will do the very thing that you most fear. That is, for example, they will take your guns, or they will so numb your mind that they might as well have taken your guns. You should fear absolute power in the hands of the executive branch. And whether or not you think Clinton made a play for that is irrelevant, because this is now, and these guys are for real, and they will give you unending war, and they will give you a reduction of the power of the middle class, and they will destroy small business in the hands of the, and put the, what is business or what's left of business will be in the hands of the very, very wealthy, and they will tax the hell out of you, and they will, in essence, destroy every value that you hold dear. That's my argument. And I understand where you're coming from, but you got to wake up and you got to smell the coffee.
Well, I would refer you to Franklin Delano Roosevelt in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about the executive branch usurping the powers of Congress in time of war.
Yeah, FDR overstepped his bounds, I think. Especially in his attempt to pack the Supreme Court.
But FDR has been dead a long, long time.
Yes, but FDR set us on the path to where we are now. And my point is not pointing fingers at the Democrats or pointing fingers at the liberals. My point is that I don't disagree with you guys on wanting to limit the powers of the executive branch. I am not for even the Greeks, when they gave a dictator supreme powers, limited it for a year.
Right.
I am not against I am against extending the Patriot Act to make it permanent law. The Patriot Act is limited power for a limited period of time to respond to an emergency, and it should remain that way with a sunset clause so that we revisit it. And if we want to reauthorize them, the power is fine. If we don't, fine. But I'm totally against increasing the power of the executive branch or overthrowing the checks and balances, because I believe half of our problem, both about people like Clinton and the way you perceive Bush, is that we're too far away already from what the founding fathers had intended, which was to keep themselves from ever being subjected to tyranny, no matter which side of the aisle it came from.
But surely you see that Bush is doing the very things that you decry Roosevelt for doing, and more so.
I see that he's doing some of it. The point is that when you're attacking Bush, okay, when you're attacking, how do I put this?
When you're attacking fascism.
Well, yeah, but see, fascism is a real facile term.
Yeah, I know.
Janet Reno was a fascist. Janet Reno sent people to Ruby Ridge to kill Americans who were just, who didn't, who I don't agree with politically, but had withdrawn up to a mountaintop to get away from it.
Yeah, well, we're not, I don't know, I can't speak for Abe, but I thought what the government did at Ruby Ridge and what they did in Waco was horrible. So, you know, we're not going to argue about that. I want us to stay with what's happening now, because what's happening now is what's scaring me.
Or let me put this to you very quickly, Kurt. What I'm getting from you is I think that our similarities here outweigh our differences. You claim to be a conservative, and I sense that you are conservative in the traditional mode, unlike these people who are trying to seize power now. And that tells me that you believe in things like civil liberties, in things like property rights. You believe in the constitutional separation of powers. You believe in the right of self-determination of each American citizen. And I'm sure that you can see, as an objective person, that those values are more in danger now than they've been at perhaps any other time in our history.
Well, unfortunately, or however you want to put it, I perceived the issues that I was most interested in to be as much at risk as you guys perceive now under the last administration, under Clinton. So my deal is, if you want to enlist people on the right, your guy said you don't need to talk to the people on the right. Yes, you do.
Yeah,
you
I agree. You do need to talk to them.
You do need to talk to us. Get off the Bush thing. Get off the personalities. Get off the political party. And get on the issues. Get on the issues.
You can't separate personality and party from what's going on right now.
Yes, but yes, you can. And if you
no.
don't, you won't get people like me to support you, because you're not saying, look, we're all in danger. Let's oppose this. Let's oppose that legislature. Let's oppose that.
Well, we can
deal with when we're on a party system.
Uh-huh.
Then you're, how do I put it? I'm not able to formulate my
ideas. No, you're doing good.
Yeah, you're doing very well.
The bottom line is I would make common cause with you in certain areas.
Uh-huh.
Okay? On certain issues, if politics right now weren't such a winner-take-all deal.
Well, I think, we're, as Abe said earlier, I think there are certain areas where we're pretty close. I'm going to disagree with you about Bush, because I think the Bush regime, and I have to go to personalities here, is unique. It's different than the old Democrats and Republicans ever were. I think the Bush-Cheney or Cheney-Bush regime is up to no good in a way that is profoundly different than ever before. But we're going to have to disagree about that for now. And I want to give some other folks an opportunity, and also we got to get on. But
all right, well,
I hope
my point.
You made your point,
you
and you did it well, and I hope you call again.
Okay, you guys have a good one.
You take care.
Excellent call.
All right, 231-8187. Let's go out to Gordon. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning. So we're still talking about, we're still not talking about it. It's the money grab. It's classism. It's pure and simple racism. And they, you know, and you're right. We really need to get out in the streets. Look at what's happened with Chavez and Bolivia and... You know, these people are dumbed down for a long time.
Right, which people? Where? Wow.
Venezuela and Bolivia. These people, the people that the natives have been dumbed down with no education, no funds, no health care, no nothing, and they have risen up.
Well, yeah, but you see, they unlike Americans, are not mystified by an enormous popular culture. They have their own popular culture, but they don't have the kind of mass media culture that we have.
Right.
They see the real results. In Bolivia, they got their water, their basic water snatched away by a French company.
Well, that's happening right now. They just went into New York, bought the water, and the French company is coming into the United States right now. They're buying up water rights all the time.
Well, hopefully the American people will wake up, but I admit that it's much harder here because we are much more, A, we're much more luxurious in our lifestyle and have much more going for us, and B, we have this mass media that completely confuses us.
And that's where we go. We must take over the media.
Whoa.
If you want to get to the people, you got to get into their consciousness, and they are exactly what they watch. And we've got to take over the media. But another thing is, if Joe, we're going to get out in the streets, we better do it fast. The city of Portland has bought 900 of these new weapons coming out of Florida. Have you read that in the Time
no,
magazine?
No, tell me about this.
Nick Begich, Baggett was on your on KBU a year ago. He came from Florida, and he created a thing with the government on taking pain and controlling pain and using pain, trying to control it from taking you into organ failure.
What? I don't know anything about this.
Yes, it's in Time Magazine. Nick Baggett, and it's earthpulse.com. He was on KBU a year ago, and they were working on this thing to help manage pain for chronic pain people. So what happened is they came through and they started to work on it. They got a hold of it, and they have this system where they can control your pain, and you can go all the way up to organ failure, but they won't let that happen.
So they aim a device at you and you start hurting?
Well, what happens is that device was then taken over by the United States military, and they have taken it, and we, Tom Potter, has bought 900 of these. They're coming in 2007. They can stand a mile away from you, and they can shoot you with a pulse of magnetic energy that will lay you out, drop you 6 feet back, lay you out, and take you to the most pain you've ever felt.
You know,
I actually
have heard about this.
That's in Time Magazine right now.
Okay.
So Potter has bought 900 of those.
Well, we're going to...
It's for people of uprising because they really need to get this Patriot Act in order to get institute what's coming down with energy crunch.
Okay, without getting into too much paranoia, we're going to look into that issue, and within the next month, we will do more on it.
Yep, it's Nick Baggett. He was on your guys' radio station, and he was May 30th of last year. And Nick Baggett, and I have the 800 number and stuff too, but it's earthpulse.com. He talks about it, and it's coming down, and it is exactly what they want to use to suppress uprising and dissent.
Okay, I really appreciate the call.
Got to start wrapping things up here.
Yeah.
Coming up today at
9 on Between the Covers, Ed Goldberg interviews Amy Bender, author of Willful Creatures, a collection of surrealist short stories. At 9:30, hear Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies speaking on dual occupations, Iraq and Palestine in Bush's empire, a lecture she gave in Portland in October. That sounds really interesting. At 10:30 on stage and studio, topics are The Seagull by Artists Repertory Theater and Charlotte's Web by Oregon Children's Theater. And at 11, Democracy Now! Topics include the Alito confirmation hearings and the humanitarian crisis in Sudan. I think we can take one more call.
One more call, and let's hope they'll make it quick.
Oh,
let's go to the next one.
All right. Good morning.
I think they both dropped out.
They
went away because we're just almost out of time.
Yes, we are.
I want to reiterate, you've got to call your congresspeople, particularly your senators, on the Alito nomination and say no. This guy is really bad news. Really bad news.
Yes.
He is very much a supporter of absolute power in the executive branch and very much supporter of the powerful against the powerless.
Yes.
The evidence is clear in his history, in his way of ruling as a judge. He's got a paper trail, and we followed it, and we know how he is, and he must be opposed as much as possible. And you must talk to your congresspeople. You must talk to your senators, whether Republican or Democrat. That's number one. Number two, there's so much you've got to do, and you've got to be willing to do it every day. Today, you could go down and protest at the Doubletree Inn at Lloyd Center and talk about the dreadfulness of a system that essentially supports the military-industrial
complex.
And at
5 p.m. Friday, there's a rally in March at Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Yeah, always fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be there.
Okay.
You're going to be there, too.
Yeah.
So
the music is swelling. That means we're done. You keep on keeping on. Yep. Stay tuned to KBOL, listener-supported radio.
Excellent call today. Thank you all for listening.
90.7 on your FM dial.